Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 23 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is my good friend J-Dub from Dubsism. Welcome back to the show, J-Dub.
Good to be back. I took time out of my Mike Brady for President campaign just to be here to talk to you today, Rob.
I'm glad you did that. But, you probably forgot about the fact that he never ran for president because he was vice president. I honestly do not remember.
It doesn't matter. It's just, after our conversation about the Brady Bunch, I just felt it deserved a callback in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. No, it was the third movie in the trilogy, The Brady Bunch in the White House. Right. All it says on IMDb right now is that Mike becomes president and names Carol as his vice president. That's all they say about it. I mean, I saw it years ago, and I actually even reviewed it on my website.
On your website you got like
and I gave it a 3 out of 10. That's all I can tell you.
Thousands of reviews you have on your website. Are you over 5,000?
I have 11,000. I'm coming actually as of recording I'm coming up on 11,200.
Okay, so why wouldn't you have the Brady Bunch movies in there? I mean, you're getting dangerous.
That's
close
right.
To hitting every movie made in the last 60 years.
No, I'm really far away. You wouldn't believe how many movies I have, on standby right now, waiting for me to watch them.
Anyway, the point is, Movie Rob, probably one of the more prolific guys out there. Go check out his stuff.
the Brady Bunch in the White House, actually, I've seen twice. I saw it once in 2003, and then I saw it again in 2017 was when I reviewed it. I tore it apart.
What else can you do with it, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so enough about Brady Bunch. Why are we actually here today, Rob?
So minute 23 doesn't talk about the Brady Bunch. Minute 23 starts off with Zeus explaining himself and ends with John and Zeus jaywalking. So we ended up talking yesterday. We ended the minute with John trying to get Zeus to join him in this new quest of him having to go, follow through with Simon's requests. Zeus basically gave an answer saying that, it's not my problem. It's, all I did was I stopped a white cop from getting killed in Harlem. And today he continues that by saying, and one white cop gets killed today. Tomorrow we got 1,000 white cops, all of them with itchy trigger fingers. Got it. So Zeus basically is adamant that he doesn't want to get involved here. He felt that he did the right thing for his neighborhood, and that was it. He didn't need to do anything else. And now he should be, let go, and he should be able to move along with what he wants to do. And then Zeus starts walking away, and Cobb then screams and goes, "Get him back." So John, quick thinking, walks over to Charlie and says, "Charlie, where'd you find that bomb?" And he goes, "Chinatown." Charlie goes, "Ah." And then he starts running after Zeus and goes, "Zeus, yo, partner, wait up." And Zeus turns and goes, hey, I ain't your partner. I ain't your neighbor, your brother, or your friend. I'm your total stranger." "Okay, stranger. You know where that park is on 115th Street in St. Nicholas?" "Yeah, it's in Harlem. Where do you think we found that bomb?" "Listen, this guy doesn't care about skin color, even if you do." I mean, I like this conversation. I like the tone of it, and I like the way that John sidesteps a lie. Because what he basically says is he doesn't outright say that this is where they found the bomb. He says, "Where do you think we found it?" Because of the fact that he had just mentioned, streets in Harlem. So Zeus takes that cue that, okay, what we're talking about here is Harlem, even though we're not. So it's an interesting way to do it. And John also sees right through the fact that Zeus is somewhat of a racist by the way that he's talking. And John already, he calls him out on it and basically just says, this guy doesn't care about color, even if you do.
Yep.
You might care if it's white or black or whatever. And I mean, this might be a callback to what was in the original part of the script that we talked about yesterday, where Zeus basically says, well, hopefully anyone who gets killed will be white people. I mean, I think that this scene gives us a lot more information than we would expect. And they do a nice job of it, of explaining to us who, first of all, who John is. Because John is willing to bend the rules in order to get what he wants and what he needs, by giving a little white lie here. And at the same time, we see that John already knows how to read Zeus and knows what Zeus is doing and what he's saying and all that stuff. So I liked it. I liked the way that they put that all together.
Well, and that scene, and you kind of hit the nail on the head here. There's a lot more to those guys establishing what they are to each other in that scene, much more than the dialogue. There's so many great nonverbals. There's a lot of, look me in the eye and tell me you don't mean that kind of stuff. There's a lot of great facial expressions. There's just a lot of stuff that's not written that's really telling you what these two guys are really all about. And I think that's really out of the minutes that I reviewed here, might be my favorite because of that.
Oh wow. Okay. Cool. Because it gives us so much insight into these characters and how much what they see of each other already at this
Well,
point.
and it's exactly, and it's because, like I said, I tend to stick borders in between these minutes and try to look at them for themselves. But there's no way to do that with that moment because this is setting up for a whole lot of things that are about to come. And, not to get ahead of the ball game here, but it starts to get important in the very next minute. But we'll talk about that when we get there.
Right. That's right. So, I mean, John mentions the park on the corner of 115th Street in St. Nicholas. Are you at all familiar with New York or not really?
Vaguely, I have relatives in Brooklyn, but I am not terribly familiar with Harlem.
Okay, so St. Nicholas Avenue is a major street that runs north south through several blocks between 111th and 193rd Street in Manhattan, and basically it passes through neighborhoods in Harlem, Hamilton Heights, Washington Heights, and it used to be an old Indian trail known as Wekusquik. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that
That's just
correctly,
interesting.
but it was then known as Harlem Lane, and people used to use it when they were going between New York and places like Kingsbridge up north and things like that. You have Saint Nicholas of Myra, who was the patron saint of New Amsterdam, which is why this main thoroughfare is named after the patron saint of New York, basically.
Makes sense.
On September 30th, 1956, there was a pilot named Thomas Fitzpatrick who landed a stolen plane on the road. So, it's something that made it somewhat famous that he did that. And they actually changed the name for part of it in 2000 to Juan Pablo de Arte Boulevard, which was all the stretch of it between Amsterdam Avenue and West 162nd Street, and who Juan Pablo de Arte is the one of the founding fathers of the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
So, I guess that's an area where there are a lot of more Dominicans that are located there.
That is true. That when you get into the northern end of the island, that yeah, there's a lot of Dominicans there. Also in the South Bronx area, from what I understand.
Okay. That is possible. And then the scene changes, and we're on a street, and we see both John and Zeus getting out of a cab, and basically Zeus says, "What am I doing?" And then John says to him, "Cheer up, things could be worse." And he goes, I was working on a nice fat suspension, smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Come on. So there's a few things I want to point out about this. First of all, did you notice the ad on top of the taxi cab?
Now, see, you always get me with these. You did this to me when we did The Great Escape, and I was at the scene where I'm locked up on the guy they're machine gunning on the fence, and you're telling me, hey, did you see who comes running around the corner in the background? Like, no, I'm watching the guy getting machine gunned. So,
but
no,
when you do this right up a minute, you have to watch everything. You have to watch everything. That's the point of this, John. So it says Hotelis Cristal, Cancun. So it's an ad for a hotel in Cancun, which is known as the Hotel Cristal, which is still around nowadays. And I actually found an ad for it where it says, at the heart of the hotel, just a stone's throw from the best nightclubs, bars, restaurants, and shopping malls, not to mention the convention center. Coco Bongo and other entertainment areas are just 2 minutes away on foot. Plaza Caracol and Plaza de Artesanias Corral Negro is just 5 minutes away on foot. Cancun Convention Center is 2 minutes away on foot. Tortuga Beach is 5 minutes away by car. Cancun International Airport is 23 minutes away by car, and the bus station is 30 minutes away by car. And I even have the address. you know, if you want, you can, you know, there's an email address for trying to make reservations in Cancun. But I just thought it was very interesting that, you know, here's a movie from 29 years ago, and the ad is still relevant, you know, for a hotel.
Well, and I mean, Cancun is still a hot vacation spot for those of us here in America. But here's an idea for
true.
You. Think about this. The next time you do one of these podcasts, get everybody together and do it live in Cancun. Huh? It's an idea.
If you're willing to foot the bill, I'm glad to do it. I'm
willing to foot the bill. Okay. Well, then that puts this project right around the 12th of never. Because, you know, how many guests do you have in your podcast? You're doing, what, 30-some weeks? So that's
something like that.
That's airfare for 30 some people, some of which I know are coming from as far away as Israel. So,
really?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe the most important guy in the mix because it's his podcast. You know, we're going to.
Yeah, okay.
Can't really do it without that guy. Otherwise, it's not Movie Rob, is it?
That is correct. That's a good point. So I think we'll hold off on that for now. We'll see. Maybe in the future.
How about Zoom backgrounds that just look like Cancun? Can we do that?
If that's what you want to do, that's fine. I mean,
no, I'm just, hey, it's your show. I'm just making a suggestion here, but you know.
Okay, you can keep suggesting. I'll keep stuffing the suggestion hat, and we'll see when I need them, I'll take them out and use them. How's that?
And your fair suggestion enough. Bin for me is right under your desk, and it has a plastic liner. Correct.
No, not at all. Never. Never, John. Don't put yourself down like that. Now, in the background, if you look in the background of when John and Zeus get out of the cab, so you see a large sign for Gray's Papaya. Have you ever heard of that?
I have not.
Okay, I've actually been at that intersection. I was visiting New York probably about 20 something years ago, and a friend of mine said, hey, this is you know, where they filmed that scene in Die Hard with a Vengeance. And I was like, wow, that's so cool. Yeah, and that was it. And like then I just walked by. You know, and so Gray's Papaya is a famous hot dog restaurant that is located on that corner, the corner of Broadway and 72nd. They used to have other locations, but they all closed. During the pandemic, four years ago. Wow, that's crazy to think about. That's been so long mm-hmm. since that happened. It's basically famous for its inexpensive, high quality hot dogs, and they are considered among the best in New York. They used to sell them for 50 cents, and now they are about $3 each. The reason that it's called papaya, so it refers to the papaya fruit drink that they sell there. They also sell other types of drinks. They have orange, grape, pina colada, coconut champagne, and banana daiquiri fruit drinks, which are all non-alcoholic. So the chain was founded by a man named Nicholas Gray, who was the partner of Papaya King, and he founded it in 1973, and opening the store here. This was the flagship store, which, as I mentioned, is the only one that's still around. In 2006, Time Out New York ranked it as the best hot dog in the city. In 2008, the New York Times reported that Gray's Papaya had endorsed Barack Obama in his campaign for a presidential election, which I find really funny that a hot dog stand or hot dog store is, endorsing a political candidate. Doesn't matter, Democrat or Republican. The fact that you're having a fast food shop, endorsing someone just is a little strange to me.
Well, I mean, American politics have gotten way screwy, and I don't want to get into it more than that,
Right.
but,
Okay. No, that I know.
you know.
Right. So, the owner, Nicholas Gray, passed away a year ago in May 2023 at the age of 86. Part of the deal in his will is that they have to keep the store open as long as possible, and his family plans to keep it open. So,
Well, if he lived to 86, he clearly wasn't eating his own product.
you never know. Look at George Burns. George Burns, would smoke cigars all the way till he passed away. That was like 101. So I guess you reach a certain point where if you're still around, you're just going to
I mean, eating a lot of hot dogs just does not seem like longevity to me, but hey, what do I know?
Probably not. Probably not. So the different places in media where Grace Papaya is mentioned. So we have it here, obviously, in Die Hard with a Vengeance, in the movie Fools Rush In with Matthew Perry, the late great Matthew Perry. One of the characters has hot dogs delivered across the country, from Grace Papaya. In 1998, You've Got Mail. Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan's characters are in Grace Papaya having food, having a meal. Chris Rock's movie Down to Earth has a scene that features the restaurant. In the 2008 movie Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, it's also shown. In the 2010 film The Backup Plan with Jennifer Lopez, she orders a hot dog from there for takeout. And in the 2005 season of How I Met Your Mother, on New Year's Eve, they have Grace Papaya. So yeah, there's it's something that has become a pop icon, I guess you could say. Then in the background.
So apparently, at all my times in New York, I just haven't gone far enough north on Broadway because I've never heard of this
All
place.
right, that's fine. I mean, I it's not kosher, so I won't eat it, so it doesn't matter to me, but I'm just familiar with
Well,
it.
I am selective about hot dogs, and to try and make up for the ham sandwich comment in the last episode, I've always been a fan. Hebrew Nationals are always one of my favorite hot dogs because they're definitely not full of as much crap as some of the others, and it's
All right,
so I don't know
that's
what's in
fair.
papayas, but I probably can't eat them either.
That's fair. And then in the background, we see another store called the Vitamin Shop. So I looked that up also to see what that is. And it also is still around. It opened up in 1977. It's been around for 47 years. They have 785 locations all around the country. And basically, it's a store that sells nutritional supplements. So it's pretty funny that you have that right next door to, Grace Papaya. So it's like, go have your hot dogs and don't forget your vitamins on the way.
Well, it seems like there's almost a Zen yin and yang thing in there.
It could be. Could very well be. So the comment that McClane makes about that he could be smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Are you familiar with that line from anywhere?
Absolutely, because that's my key to this whole minute. And the minute he said that, it took me right to another rule. If you haven't listened to the other episodes for this week, one of my things is I'm not a big fan of trilogies or sequels, not trilogies, but remakes or sequels. We talked about trilogies in one of those episodes. That's where I got a little wrapped up there. But here's the thing. The rule here is, in a sequel, it's not bad to use tropes from other movies if you have a link. And let's not forget, Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis both show up in Pulp Fiction, where that song by the Statler Brothers, Flowers That's on right. the Wall, is featured prominently in the soundtrack. The minute he said that, I was like, okay, that's a definite callback to Pulp Fiction. I don't care what you tell me.
No.
Please tell me you're going to mention this in the script.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, again, because you talk about how a lot of this wasn't in the script, so I just but you when you said smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo not once but twice, I figured okay, we were on the same page with what we grabbed out of this, even though I never heard of the hot dog place and never saw the ad on the cab, so I thought we were still getting there in a connection.
We're getting there in the connection. Okay. Don't worry about that. So the song by the Statler Brothers came out on June 14th, 1965, and it is the song is Flowers on the Wall. It is 2 minutes and 19 seconds, and basically it was written and composed by Lou DeWitt. It spent 4 weeks at number two on the Billboard magazine Hot Country Singles chart, and then it reached number four on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. It won a Grammy in 1967 for Best Contemporary Performance. And they re-recorded the song in 1975 for their greatest hits album, The Best of the Statler Brothers. In popular culture, obviously, it features prominently in Pulp Fiction. And, you know, here we have it once again in Die Hard with a Vengeance. Kurt Vonnegut quotes the song's lyrics in his book Palm Sunday. From 1981, where he writes the song, he says the song is yet another great contemporary poem by the Statler Brothers, and uses it to describe the present condition of an American man who has recently departed his family. It's not a poem of escape or rebirth. It is a poem about the end of a man's usefulness. So I guess, you know, there he isn't useful anymore. And there is a radio series called Linda Smith's A Brief History of Time Wasting, and that is the theme song of her radio show.
Again, we've learned something here today.
That's right. Now, did you notice what John and Zeus do as they get out of the cab? You know that they break a law.
Isn't there some jaywalking involved here?
Yes, there is. There is jaywalking. How much do you think the fine is in New York for jaywalking?
Nowadays, if the city's going bankrupt, probably somewhere around $75,000.
Okay. It's a little less than that.
What, 50? What?
$150.
Buck 50, okay.
No, $150.
Well, yeah, I mean, gamblers, that's a buck 50. But now, yeah. You don't happen to have any numbers on how many jaywalking tickets NYPD hands out in a year, do you?
That I okay, don't.
Don't look it up now. But you know, if somebody wants to,
no, I wasn't going to on Twitter. I wasn't going to go look that up.
You tell us how many.
No. I wasn't going to do that. You're safe. Safe.
Let somebody listen and fill us in. It's our,
for sure. Feedback. But there is some. There is some interesting information I want to give about jaywalking. And so pedestrians always have the right of way unless they are jaywalking. But because they're jaywalking, that doesn't give you a license to hit them. No matter how much you may want to teach them a lesson, make all attempts to stop if a jaywalker crosses the street in front of you. If you're in a busy area, such as main intersections or school or playground zones, expect that someone is going to cross the street and slow down. Decreasing your speed by a few miles an hour will give you more time to stop and help you stop faster if the unexpected happens. Make sure your lights and windshield are clean. New York is infamous for its nightlife, and if you're driving your Manhattan rental car around at night, chances are a pedestrian will appear on the street, except the darkness will make them harder to see. See and be seen by keeping your windshield and lights clear and crisp. Keep your eyes on other vehicles around you. Sometimes you may see something you don't, such as someone crossing the street. Be prepared to stop in case another vehicle is stopped for a pedestrian. If you are stopping for a pedestrian, don't block the crosswalk if you help it. If you pull up to the crosswalk lines, your Manhattan rental car may obscure the view of other drivers who may not realize someone is crossing. Make sure the pedestrian has completely cleared the adjacent lanes before proceeding. This will alert other drivers that there is someone crossing the street. If you notice any vehicles approaching the intersection quickly, flash your brake lights or honk your horn. This could both alert the driver and the pedestrian. If you're turning left, be aware the pedestrian's crossing the street to your left. Due to the constantly busy streets in New York, you may be focused on approaching traffic and fail to notice pedestrians. When you stop a gap, check for pedestrians and then turn. Keep an eye out for jaywalkers while navigating the streets in your Manhattan rental car. Although drivers have the right of way over jaywalkers, no one wins if a collision happens. However, renting your car from Action Car Rentals causes everyone to win. Visit our website.
Welcome to the Movie Rob Minute by Minute podcast, brought to you by the good people at Action Rental Cars.
Exactly. So, what month of the year do you think there are the most pedestrian collisions?
Most pedestrian collisions in New York City. I'm gonna go December.
No, the answer is November. And what month has the least amount of collisions?
Least amount of collisions would probably be a summer month, like July or August.
April.
Okay. Does it give any reason why? No.
Okay. No, doesn't give a reason.
Those of you listening, if you would like to dig up an answer for that and send us a note, that would be greatly appreciated.
That's right. What day of the week do you think there are most pedestrian collisions?
Friday.
Very good. There you go. You got that one. And what day has the least amount?
Sunday.
Saturday.
Saturday. Okay.
Saturday. What time of day are most likely pedestrian collisions going to happen?
5 p.m.
Evening rush hour. Yes, you are correct. So, yeah, I love giving those fun little tidbits. So,
the good people at Action Rent-A-Car.
There you go. All right, so that's all I have for this minute. Would you like to give your sports analogy?
Well, okay, yeah, we talked about this just a little bit. We were talking about the Statler Brothers song and how tropes borrowing from other things to make your sequel / remake feel familiar to people that have seen the other things that you're borrowing from. This is what, before Vince McMahon took over the world of professional wrestling and made it one giant universal entity, it used to be these little hodgepodges all over the place, and they were regional. There was a guy who had a wrestling outfit in Minneapolis, and there was a guy who had one in Georgia, and there was a guy who had one in Memphis, and there was another guy in Texas, and they all kind of did their own same things. They all had kind of the same sort of characters, even though they were named differently. Like, you'd always have your Hulk Hogan, your big heroic heavyweight champ guy that everybody loved, and then you had the head bad guy, and then you had the tag team guy, and then you had the wide range of stereotypical characters, whether it was, in the 70s, the bad guy had to be some kind of Russian or some sort of guy like that, or, something, not quite overtly racist, but still things that, people in the South could yell things at, sort of thing. And that's kind of what this movie did with that song. And that is, bring all this stuff out, give you something that makes you think of whatever trope you're going for, and then, in the case of wrestling, sell beer and popcorn on top of it, and you got something.
Sounds like fun. And then they decided, to put it all together.
Wrestling fan. Yes. I mean, Rowdy Roddy Piper had to come from somewhere.
That's true. He did. He came from Minneapolis, didn't he?
Actually, he was a Canadian guy, and he was Canadian, and then I knew him as a kid in California with West Coast Wrestling before anybody knew who he was nationwide, and that's where he got the Piper nickname, because he actually did play the bagpipes. And in Los Angeles in the 70s, the wrestling audience was about 50-50 Mexicans, with the luchadores and that sort of thing. But Rowdy Roddy Piper's shtick is that he would deliberately and antagonize the Mexicans, and you know, playing the bad guy role. And then one day he says, okay, well, I want to make it up to you because, you know, I feel bad for all the terrible things that I've said about Mexicans, and I don't want to come off as a racist. So I came out here with my bagpipes, and I want to play a song just for you. And he starts playing La Cucaracha. And it was the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life, watching, you know, this guy in the middle of a wrestling ring playing La Cucaracha in a very demeaning, insulting way to an audience full of Mexicans. And I remember thinking to myself, this guy's going to get killed in the parking lot. There's no way he gets out of here alive. But he did, and he became, you know, one of the biggest stars that, it's hard to call it a sport, but that bit of entertainment that ever really had.
True. Now we'll get into the script. So the script does continue a little bit with some of the stuff that we talked about yesterday. You know, we had the interesting comments from Zeus. And then, so Cobb starts off this minute in the script by saying, get him back here, John. McClane then asks, where was the bomb in the park, high or low? Then Walsh responds, high, the jungle gym at 107. McClane hurries out the door and runs after Zeus, who is walking quickly towards the exit. He heads him off. Zeus stops. What? You know that playground on 107th Street? Of course I know it. It's in Harlem. I played there when I was a kid. That's where we found the last bomb. This isn't a white problem, Zeus. Zeus frowns. He wearily turns and follows McClane back to Cobb's office. And then we're back in the bullpen. McClane and Zeus are exiting Cobb's office, and Cobb is barking orders. John, don't play around. Do exactly what he says. Ricky and Joe, get a civilian vehicle from the undercover guys. Follow him to 72nd, but keep your distances and keep me informed. McClane and Zeus disappear through the exit doors. Lambert and Walsh go the other way to the motor pool. Cobb comes back to his office, mumbles, Simon says, hits the intercom on his phone. Janie, get me the mayor's office. A yellow taxicab sits on the curb. A uniformed patrolman holds the door open for McClane and Zeus, who race down the stone steps. They hop into the taxi. The door slams shut. The taxi speeds off into traffic. The taxi pulls up on the curb on Broadway. McClane and Zeus scramble out and run across the street. And that's how the script ends here for this minute. It gives us a little bit more, but again, I prefer what they did in the final cut here. I think it works much better that way.
Yes.
Yeah. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hey Zeus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Samuel L. Jackson performances. So hopefully you have five this time, John. I'm hoping.
Yes, I do. And they, you know, we're just going to start with the fact that in a theme for this week, for any time I have been asked for one of these guest pieces, I don't know why I'm in this episode. Well, go back to the Monday's episode. That'll tell you why I'm in this episode. But there's a lot of stuff I just don't like. Sequels, remakes. Samuel L. Jackson is another thing. He drives me nuts. And so number five on the list is Goodfellas, just because I do enjoy watching him get shot in the head. I'm sorry. Don't at Rob for this. If you got something to say, at Dubsism, I'm easy to find. You'll hear that in all of these podcasts. Don't blow up his email. That's 100% my commentary. He is not responsible for this in any way, shape, or form. Is that a good enough disclaimer for that?
No, I'm responsible because I invited you, so it doesn't matter. I take responsibility.
Well,
for that. I'm good with it.
You just undid everything I did, you know. So if your email box fills up, I tried to help. I just want that
known. I'm good with it. I'm fine.
Okay. Now, number four, and this is something we talked about earlier, where I talk about, you know, if I know I'm getting a good Samuel L. Jackson performance, I know it's going to be racially charged. And for my money, there's almost no better example of a racially charged movie than Do the Right Thing, you know? So on that note, number three fits the same mold, but this also exemplifies why I'm not a big Samuel L. Jackson fan. And the racially charged movie is Django Unchained. And the problem I've got with Samuel L. Jackson is, if you've seen that movie, you know the character he plays of Steven is not really a great guy, okay? But when Samuel L. Jackson got a lot of flack for that role, he tried to sell the idea that, I had no idea that that role was as bad as it was. I'm like, dude, you played that role. Don't tell me you didn't know exactly what you were doing. Now, whether you want to agree with, you know, the racial component of that movie, again, you can at me all you want. You know, the thing is, don't tell me you didn't know what you were doing. Okay. Just don't. Nobody's buying that. Now, to be fair, I think Samuel L. Jackson's great in Pulp Fiction. I mean, you could do Samuel L. Jackson lines from that movie all day long. In fact, when we get done with this, I am going out for a big Kahuna burger. And, you know, if you want to talk about foot massages, we can talk about foot massages. But I love him in that movie. But, again, as we are recording, it is spring, and we are in the middle of the college basketball tournaments. There is nothing better than Samuel L. Jackson in those Capital One commercials with Spike Lee and Charles Barkley, because those are just hilarious. And that's, I mean, if you want to see Samuel L. Jackson without being a race baiter, that's where you got to go. And somehow he manages to pull it off in a commercial with Spike Lee, who is America's biggest race baiter. Again, at me, at Dubsism, don't go after Movie Rob for the things I'm saying here. He didn't know what he was doing when he invited me. So send the comments to me, not him.
I knew exactly what I was doing. Don't worry. I take full responsibility.
Every time I try and get you off the hook, you go right back to it. Okay.
It's my show.
All right.
So I gotta own up to it. All right. Thank you for that list. So why don't you tell everyone once again where they can find J-Dub?
Dubsism, the most interesting independent sports blog on the web, and my mailbox is probably going to get even more interesting after this, but Dubsism, it's a first page search result on Google. You can find me on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, Facebook, if it's a social outlet, you can find me. I don't really do TikTok, don't look for me there. Google it, Dubsism. I'm out there.
Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to send me an email, especially if you want to complain about J-Dub, just send it to movierobminute at movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother trucker!
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah! Hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.